couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, I'm going to be talking about Bill and Ted Face the Music, the personal history of David Copperfield, Centigrade, The Binge, and Get Duped. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a spotlight on the original Bill and Ted movies. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/Kevin Carr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
I just want to offer a thanks to all the listeners out there. I got an awful lot of support over this summer for sort of the country music song that my life had turned into. You know, my father had passed away in July. I got such love and support from the listeners and the hosts. I want to thank them so much. And even just recently, with my dog passing, I also got some wonderful notes from people and responses. Big shout out to Adam from Ohio. I appreciate all the support and the prayers and the love that everybody has given me. But now let's move on to more relevant movie news. I think it is important to talk about Unhinged and how it did at the box office last week. And the numbers have an asterisk next to them. Unhinged made, over the course of the weekend, about $4 million. Now, on a normal weekend, and even in late August, even right before Labor Day, that would be considered a miserable showing for most movies opening, certainly for the top of the box office. But we have to realize this is the first wide release after the pandemic shutdown and after some theaters and some of the chains are finally opening up. And even then, you have to realize that number comes tempered with the fact that there are a lot of regions that still had the multiplexes closed. The big ones, of course, being New York and California. On top of it, you can't pack a theater. Every place is socially distanced and they're only selling to limited capacities. And then, of course, you have just the fact that a lot of people, some people don't even know the theaters were open. You know, if they're not paying attention to the movie news or this show, and if you're not, why not? You should be listening to at least me, because I'm important in the world. But this is, of course, everything that has contributed to the fact that Unhinged is only at $4 million. But $4 million is really good. It's the first time any movie's broken $1 million, like, in 5 months. And that's because it's not just playing at drive-ins. While that's not a huge number, that at least shows people have returned in smaller numbers, the question is, going forward, are people going to continue to return? Was it just a novelty to return and then people are like, okay, I'll back off? If a movie like Tenet, and that comes out next week, is going to drive people, and if the studios think that things are working enough that they can roll out other massive, expensive movies like the Wonder Woman movie, like James Bond. So we're still in a holding pattern to see how things do this weekend. And I think it'll be interesting to compare next week when we talk about this, how something like The New Mutants do, which is exclusively in theaters, versus Bill and Ted Face the Music, which is both in theaters and online. Moving on to another piece of news, and I want to put this in this segment too, because I don't want it to mess up the reviews of the Bill and Ted movies, either the originals or the new one. And that is to address this one little wart in the original two Bill and Ted's movies that have a homophobic joke. It uses the F word, and I've got multiple gay friends, and I know how painful that was. So I mean, these are people who are about my age, so they went to school in the 80s, and they got called that word all the time. And that word was thrown around all the time. And I'll admit it, I threw it around too, because I was a stupid teenager. And it was wrong, and it was crass, and it was bad. And I'm not excusing it. But I think a lot of times we have to look at a movie in the time in which it was made. And in particular, the joke, it's in this first movie. They're in medieval England, and Bill thinks Ted gets killed, but Ted falls out of his suit of armor and comes out later and knocks out a knight that's going to try and attack Bill. And they're so excited to see each other, and Bill's so excited that Ted's still alive, that they give each other a real genuine hug. And then they pull back and they call each other, you know, the slur. Now, a couple things for context, because I've seen people sit there go, oh, it's so jarring and hard to watch, and it's just so crazy. I remember seeing that movie opening weekend in theaters in 1988. And that joke was probably the one that got the biggest laugh in the entire movie. And that's a sign of the times. It's a crass joke now. It is not an enlightened joke. It is not appropriate. But let me tell you, back in 1988, that's how high school boys talked. I went to a school of 2,000 students and nobody was out. And I guarantee you that there were plenty of gay people in that school. 1988 was a very different world. And you cannot sit back in an ivory tower and judge necessarily what happens in a time period. It's like the Mickey Rooney character in Breakfast at Tiffany's or the blackface scene in Holiday Inn. I mean, some of these things are offensive and they are certainly shocking and damning now, but they were done in a very different cultural context. And to cancel the entirety of Bill and Ted just because there's one joke. And also, even if you look at the joke, dissect the joke, it was such a genuine hug, but they were still stupid teenage kids, and they had to put up that veneer of machismo, and that was the joke. It's actually making fun of people who use that slur. That was the joke, because in the 80s, guys didn't hug. I mean, my God, the first episode of Happy Days where the Fonz actually cried was only 3 or 4 years before that. So the world was still working through a lot of macho BS. You have to take things in context of what they are, and you can't cancel an entire movie because of it, and you certainly should not be editing that out. That is an ugly element of the 80s, just as ugly elements of Revenge of the Nerds and 16 Candles and all these other teen movies from the 80s had, and we need to understand that and recognize it and move beyond it. Listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. There was a DC online event this week, and it dropped a bunch of trailers, so I got to talk about these. The first one is Justice League, the Snyder Cut, which is coming as a 4-hour monstrosity on HBO Max in 2021.
This guy's probably fought hundreds of thousands of other super beings on the other planets he's destroyed, right? And we have to assume he's won.
I don't care how many demons he's fought and how many hells. He's never fought us. Not us united.
I get nothing from this trailer. You get about as much as I do because it's slow motion, the movie. It's cool shots, but an amalgamation of cool shots does not a story make. And my other question is why is this so different? I know that they had the whole thing where Zack Snyder's daughter killed herself, and that was horrible and terrible, and it was giving it to a very different style of a director, but how is this so different is my big question. I don't know if this is ending good. You get no sense of story or character or style out of this aside from moving slow motion pictures in a poster. We'll see. It might be good, but I'm holding out any sort of judgment until I actually watch a coherent story. The other one that was released, which is causing a lot of buzz, is The Batman, which releases in theaters on October 1st in 2021.
You're becoming quite a celebrity. Why is he writing to you?
If you are justice, please do not lie. What is the price for your blind eye?
The hell are you supposed to be?
I'm vengeance.
It looks like a retread of a lot of stuff. Aside from the emo look of Robert Pattinson as Bruce Wayne, this looks like it was cobbled together from scraps from Nolan's movie and a little bit of the Joker. I mean, it doesn't look like there's anything unique or different to this. I'm not saying we have to go back to Adam West's chum, you know, silliness of the 60s, but my God, how much darker can we get? Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Centigrade and Get Duked. Batman! to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with Centigrade. On a book tour in Norway, a couple get caught in a snowstorm and end up being trapped in ice in their vehicle for weeks.
Okay. I think we're snowed under. Any ideas how we're getting out of here?
I don't think we should get out of here.
We're gonna freeze in here.
And you don't think we're gonna freeze out there?
I just need you to trust me, okay?
Okay. It's getting colder in here.
I know.
What's gonna happen when the food runs out?
Don't think like that.
We have to break a window.
This is insane.
What's insane is traipsing around the frozen wilderness.
I don't know how much of a true story this is. It's inspired by a true story, but you never know. Look, there's based on a true story, which means they're trying at least in a Hollywood way to give you the real story. And then there's inspired by a true story, which means it's a lot looser. And then they go inspired by true events. That's even looser. So somewhere it's between true events and inspired by a true story. So I don't know how much of this is real. There's not even anything on Wikipedia, and I didn't read anything more than that. I'm lazy. But the movie itself, almost the entire film takes place within this. Well, it looks like it's a minivan is what they're in. It's a man and a woman. Genesis Rodriguez plays the woman. The guy is somebody I never really recognize. I'll recognize Genesis Rodriguez anywhere because I think she's gorgeous. But part of the gist of it is she's pregnant. And they're, like I said, stuck on the side of the road, and their van is covered with ice, snow and ice. And the ice is frozen, so they can't get the doors open. And they can't get the windows open, you know, kind of everything. They're boxed in, literally. And so the entire movie, almost entirely, almost every single shot is somewhere within that minivan, which makes it a challenge. And I give it the director's real props, because that is not easy to do. It's tough enough to do like a bottle episode of a TV show for an hour where nobody can leave a room, let alone two people trapped in a van. The problem with a survival story like this is there are too many times where you can just say, well, why don't they do this? Why don't they do this? And that's the biggest struggle with putting one of these together, because everybody always outguesses what the people are doing. Like one of the first things they do, they have a sunroof. And I'm like, that would have been my first place I would have gone. Go to the sunroof, try and open it up or whatever. And I think they're trying to imply that they ran out of gas, that they stopped the side of the road and they let the car run and it ran out of gas. But the thing is, there should still be electricity in the battery. Like, she has a cell phone, but the cell phone's running out of battery. And I'm like, why would you travel anywhere? I mean, I can understand if you're just running to McDonald's to get a drink or something and you get stuck in snow. But I mean, if you're going to travel to Norway and you're going to be in a van driving from place to place, you're going to want a car charger. Why didn't they have a car charger? Because the battery should at least have some juice in it. And that's why you go up to the sunroof. You know, so there's all these different things of why didn't they try this? Why didn't they try this? I don't know. And so you find yourself second guessing them throughout the whole movie, which becomes a distraction to me. And the other thing I didn't like about it is the moment they wake up, because they're asleep, because they pulled off the side of the road in the middle of an ice storm, and they're at each other's throat from the beginning. She's complaining and sniping at him, and he's trying to be uplifting, but she's just like shooting everything down. Like, what's your problem? Why did you? And I'm just like, oh my God, if this is the way you are on day one, how are you going to get to day whatever, 20? That's why I was completely flummoxed by this movie, because I'm like, I already hate them both. And there are certain cliches in there that you can probably guess, but I'm not going to go into. So it just, honestly, if they had better characters, if I liked the people in the car more, I would have liked this movie, but I was just annoyed with them. I was at a certain point, I'm just like, well, just climb out and leave her, because she's being a pain in the butt. There's other things that, like, logically don't quite make sense to me, and either they had a reason and didn't explain it, or I don't know. I didn't connect to it. Like I said, maybe if I would have liked the characters better, but I gotta say that Centigrade kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second, I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Get Duked. A group of Scottish teenagers take a trip through the Highlands to find themselves hunted by a mysterious figure.
Okay, roll call.
Duncan McDonald.
Yeah! Dean Gibson.
DJ Beetroot.
DJ Beetroot!
or can I have your real name?
Be careful. You don't want to get lost in the Highlands. There's danger everywhere.
Hello, boys!
Is that the Duke of Edinburgh?
Run! He nearly killed us!
This is our number one case now. Nothing ever happens in the Highlands.
This premieres on Amazon this week. So if you've got Amazon Prime, you can watch it for free. It's a Scottish movie, obviously. It takes place in the Highlands. And I guess this is a real thing where they take kids, they sign up for this program and they take these kids and they drop them off. I don't know if this is a real thing or not. I didn't even look this up. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. It sounds kind of dangerous, but they drop these kids off and they're supposed to make their way through the Highlands and avoid any sort of problems and obstacles and people who farm and that sort of thing. And then when they get to the cliffs at the end, then they go home and they earn like the Duke of Edinburgh's award or something like that. I'm not Scottish. I'm not from Scotland. I don't know if this is true or not, but they present it as if it's a real thing that kids in secondary school do. But the kids also use it as an excuse to go get drunk and high in the Scottish Highlands. There's a reason they call it the Highlands. Just goof off, and it's really not taken seriously by the kids. And the three out of the four boys are basically chavs. They think they're really cool. They're wearing the sports clothes and they're speaking in that, you know, that sort of that chav accent. And even though they're Scottish, it's so they're a bunch of punks. And there's one kid who's a nerd who's actually prepared for this. Ultimately, it works. It takes a little bit of while to get into it because the three chavs are kind of annoying. And maybe it's because I'm in my late 40s and I don't find that charming. But they finally gel and they work together. And there is somebody really hunting them. And that makes it kind of cool. And that makes it kind of this weird mystery that it's almost, well, that's Scotland for you. That's sort of the response that they have. And of course, they have the dim-witted police force trying to, because of the Highlands, it's farms and it's beautiful land, but you know, it's not, you know, it's sort of like in Hot Fuzz when he left London to go to the countryside. This was the kind of area that he was policing where their biggest problem they've had in months was a guy who was stealing bread from a bakery or something like that. But still, I gotta say, once you warm up to the characters, once the characters are actually working together and trying to fight for their lives and they have a sort of an interest and aren't just sitting there trying to smoke drugs, it's kind of a cool little movie. It's fun. It's irreverent. It's obnoxious. And of course, it pushes boundaries. But I gotta say, I liked it when it finally gets to the end. Cause the other thing it does is it does some pretty outrageous things and doesn't gloss over them. They do some daring stuff and you're like, oh, well, they went there. That's a surprise. I was not expecting that. And then they do other things in response to those original twists, but the twist just makes it even weirder. And I appreciated the weirdness and I appreciated the uniqueness to this and the unique Scottishness to us. I mean, as an American, it's very foreign to me, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of cool. So I'm going to have to say that Get Duke kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Bill and Ted Face the Music and The Binge. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the one that everybody's talking about this week. Not the New Mutants. Nope. Look, I will eventually see the New Mutants. Here's one of the things. And I'll talk about it in a couple weeks because I think it's going to burn its way through the box office extremely fast. And Disney Plus is going to have it on for free, just included with their stuff by Halloween. So I can wait 6 to 8 weeks for this. Anyways, Bill and Ted Face the Music, the excellent heroes from Wild Stallions and San Dimas must save the world again with the help of their daughters.
Bill, Ted, enough of the delusions. You didn't time travel, and you didn't go to heaven and hell. Here's a real idea for you. Be role models to your daughters. Get real jobs.
A song created by Preston Logan, performed tonight, will save reality as we know it.
Dude, our dads are totally in trouble.
We should help them out.
One of the biggest struggles about coming back and doing a continuation of a series or a movie or a TV show after this many years, because it's been almost 30 years since Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. When the problem when you have something like that is getting that organic feel of the original movies again. I mean, my God, Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves are in their 50s. The divorcing and remarrying girl 3 years older than them. She's like, I think the actress is like 61. She looks great for 61, but it's great that they've brought a lot of the same actors back. They got Ted's father showing up again, and he's great. So I think what's nice is the people that are still around. I mean, obviously, like, you know, George Carlin's not there anymore, but the people that are still around are happy to do the movie and are excited to do it. It weirdly enough, it takes Alex Winter and Keanu Reeves some time to really kind of fall into their characters, because their characters are those idiot high school and 20-something characters. When you're 51, 52, it makes it a little more awkward, if that makes sense. And so, in that first third of the movie's about an hour and a half long. So that first half hour, it's a little clunky. I gotta admit, it takes a while to get that dust out of the gears. And that's knowing that Bogus Journey wasn't the greatest sequel in the world, but it was still pretty good. This one's trying to recapture that, but you know, you're reaching in the past 30 years. And they realize, you're like, if we put all the awkward, clunky stuff in the beginning, we'll be good. And they do that. And then they get to the second half hour, and it starts to take off. It starts to feel like a Bill and Ted movie again. And partly because they've got the two daughters. And the two daughters are a scream in this movie, because they emulate their dads from the original films. So you can get the kind of dim-witted idiot teenage slash early 20s, yeah man, so we're gonna go do this, make this movie, okay? And you can capture that character without making it guys in their 50s needing to support the stupidity so much. And they do a great job. So in a certain way, you got the daughters kind of rehashing the plot from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, but doing it in a very different way. And then when they get to the third half hour, it really does take off. I mean, if anything, this movie does cram all of its clunkiness into the first part, and it gets better as the movie goes on. And by the time you're in the last half hour of the movie, you're just like, oh yeah, I'm in with both feet. You know, I mean, it's stupid and completely insane and absurd. And you know, if you think about it at all for 5 seconds, it completely collapses like a house of cards. But that is not what the Bill and Ted movies were ever meant to have done to them. The Bill and Ted movies were meant to be fun and silly and stupid. You know, I mean, it's kind of brilliantly put together, because there's awkwardness that needs to happen. They cram it in the beginning, and as it moves on, and then you get these extra characters, and it's not just the old characters at work. You know, it's kind of like when you watch Sesame Street, and they like have the Sesame Street's greatest hits, and they're still playing songs from the 70s, Not Easy Being Green, and C is for Cookie, and you're like, what have you done in the last 20 years? Yes, you got Bill and Ted, and you've got the new characters. You got these daughters. You got this robot bounty hunter in here. I mean, it's not just Bill, Ted, and Death being funny again. It's more people. And that's, I think, what made the second movie work, because they brought in William Sadler as Death, and that changed the dynamic, but had a little bit of fun. So yeah, I have to say, Bill and Ted Face of Music is exactly what we need right now. It is exactly the kind of silly, irreverent, fun nonsense that I could do with a couple doses of right now. So yeah, I'm going to have to say that Bill and Ted's Face the Music is most excellent, and it totally rocks, dude.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is The Binge. It's on Hulu exclusively. So if you got Hulu, you can check this one out. On a night where all drug use is legal, a group of teenagers try to make it to the coolest party in town.
For you seniors, you will be able to participate in your verse binge.
It's
So are you gonna binge?
After your dad's speech?
I've been seriously thinking about it.
Me too, by the way.
This is our last chance to make a great memory.
Seven, six.
Tonight, we become legends. Look, we go to that party, you look Lena in the eyes and tell her exactly what you wanted to tell her your entire life.
To our first sip of alcohol.
This is done by American High, which is... they did movies like Big Time Adolescent, which came out earlier this year, and that was the one with Pete Davidson. This is another original film, and it look honestly, when you watch this and when they play that first 2-3 minutes and explain the premise being that in order to curb illegal drug use and sober up society, they allow a 12-hour binge where you can just do whatever drugs you want and that gets it out of your system for the rest of the year. You can tell that you're like, oh yeah, you guys got drunk and watched The Purge. And then somebody made a joke about binging and purging. And then they said, oh yeah, man, wouldn't it be great if we had a movie about binging and not just purging, but binging, we're just going to drink alcohol and take all the drugs. Ah, it's amazing. Ah. I don't know if that's how the script started, but it certainly feels that way. And they basically take this framework and stick it on a teen sex comedy with very little sex. It's not Porky's. Let's just put it that way. And it's your standard teens getting to an all-night party. And we've had these all the time. There's classic ones, you know, stuff like Superbad or Can't Hardly Wait or Dazed and Confused. I mean, there's a lot of these movies that are out there of the people running around trying to get to a party or just partying all night. And it's a certain level of a coming-of-age movie. And they do try to do it. They go through all the motions that they are supposed to. They have all the characters that you're supposed to. It is just not well put together. It is not well written. There's two elements to it that have a certain level of being clever. The first one is the idea, which I think was a drunken discussion while they were watching The Purge. And then the second part is this song and dance number that shows up in the middle of it. That is kind of cute, but even then it's just like, okay, you're just overplaying the joke. It's kind of like when you watch The Purge and you're like, well, this would never sustain. You know, this would not work. Because you'd have revenge and lasting pain and memories, and then people wouldn't be able to get over the purge. And in this one, everyone would die of a heart attack with the amount of cocaine that is being thrown around in this movie, especially if you've not done any of these drugs. You know, it's not like you're throwing Keith Richard into the mix where he can just, you know, take whatever and be like, oh, that's nothing from what I did in the 70s. You know, but I mean, this is one of these things where I don't know how anyone's alive in this movie. The bottom line is none of the characters are really all that unique. They try and they try to do the jokes that you'd expect to see in any sort of teen sex comedy, but they just never quite click. And then they come up with an idea and you're just like, that doesn't quite work. But you're leaning into it and you're just going to keep going. Okay. I'll be back in about 2 minutes. I'm going to go make a sandwich. So the movie itself is misguided. It feels like they had this great idea and then they forced everything else out. None of it clicks. It misfires almost everything. And unfortunately, that makes the binge suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the personal history of David Copperfield and the home cinema roundup featuring the original Bill and Ted movies. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on and finish up the movie reviews with the personal history of David Copperfield. That's a mouthful. Although the title of the book's even longer. The official sort of original title of the book, which was not meant to be the title, it's even longer than that. Most people know it as David Copperfield. But this is a nod to the fact that it has a longer title. Based on Charles Dickens' masterpiece, Dev Patel plays a man who grew up in and out of poverty, who struggles to live a righteous life.
London is full of wonders and wickedness.
And it's ours, David, to go wherever we choose.
Copperfield!
Your mama is ill.
How ill is she?
Very ill.
Very ill.
Very ill.
Very ill.
Dangerously ill.
She's dead.
We're very sorry.
you had nothing, then you had something, and now you got nothing again. So stands to right, you'll have something again.
I do have a confession. I've never read David Copperfield. I have some blind spots in my literature background. But I do know a little bit about Dickens, and I'm familiar with the story. I mean, it's been borrowed here and there. I do know that Dickens had two types of books that he wrote, and there were the one-off publishing book like Christmas Carol, which is why that's like 100 pages long. And then he had serials that he'd publish every week or month or whatever. And that's why you get David Copperfield to be like 700 pages long. Same thing with like Great Expectations, as I understand. That one paid by the word. So you get a much longer book. The struggle is putting it into a movie. Because movies have to be at most a couple hours long. And the more successful adaptations of this have been miniseries and limited series on television. I believe the BBC has done a bunch of them, and the American television has done some. I think this is the first feature film adaptation in about 50 years. And for that matter, I mean, the story's good. It's a good, solid story, and it tells, you know, the rise and fall of this guy as he's struggling to get by, and he at times has comfort. He's attached to wealth, and there's times when he's in abject poverty. And I think they balance it really well. It's kind of a lighthearted tale, even considering some of the tragic stuff that happens. There's some really neat elements of almost a surrealism as it tells the story. There are times where you don't know whether you're the story or the story within the story. And that's tipping its hat to the fact that there's certain amounts of autobiographical elements to David Copperfield for Charles Dickens. Now, there are some changes that are made. I went and I looked up the synopsis. There are some characters that change and their fates change. And I think they did that just because it's already a dense book, and they only had so much room in the movie. But the other thing is, because they have to condense this into a two-hour film, there are certain elements that don't hold the same impact. For example, Uriah Heep is the bad guy in the second half of the book. And the second half of the movie is like 45 minutes long. So even though Uriah Heep's introduced earlier, he doesn't become a formidable enemy until much later, and then they just don't have the development of him. He just kind of comes and goes and boom, 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 and then you're like, nope, he's the bad guy. And so it loses a lot of its impact, an emotional impact and punch, because there are so many characters it's juggling, and that's, I don't consider that a fault of the movie, it's just a fault of the structure. And then finally, the other thing that got in my way of this is, it had colorblind casting. And look, I'm all for colorblind casting if it makes sense. Black James Bond, go for it. I don't want you to go find a black James Bond. I want you to get the best person to play James Bond. And that might be Idris Elba. And then I'm like, I'm on board. Whoever plays the role best should play the role. However, if you're doing a movie that takes place in Victorian England, multicultural casting doesn't quite work. I mean, unless you're trying to make it like, you know, that's the point. Like Hamilton, the point of Hamilton is casting people of color as all of these founding father characters. But it just seems almost confusing in trying to keep track of who's who and who's related to who. And of course, all the villains in the movie are white, but it gets in the way. At a certain point, to me, the quote unquote colorblind casting of this movie is almost stunt casting. You can't tell me that Dev Patel was the best person to play that role. They wanted to go multicultural, and so they got Dev Patel. I mean, Dev Patel's fine, but look, he's not the greatest actor on the planet. There were plenty of other people that could have played David Copperfield well. So that's a knock against it, but I wouldn't let that stop you from seeing the movie. So I'm going to have to say that the personal history of David Copperfield kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. I'm going to look back at the first two Bill and Ted movies just really quickly because it's a nice way to finish off the show. We're kind of going back in time, which is what the movies are about. And then the first one, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, two dim-witted teenagers from San Dimas, California, use a time machine to travel through the past in order to pass their history final.
A motion picture so grand, so magnificent, and so vast, it spans 7,000 years.
No way!
Yes way!
But it starts with Bill.
I'm Bill S. Preston!
Who is Joan of Arc?
And Ted.
Noah's wife? We're in danger of flunking most heinously tomorrow.
They're traveling through time.
How's it going, royal ugly dudes?
Put them in the Iron Maiden.
Excellent!
Execute them.
Bogus.
This was one of those surprise, brilliant gems of the 80s. It's one of those movies, when they made this, I don't think they thought it was going to be as big of a hit as it was. It is just a genuine, sweet, effervescent, cool, funny, lighthearted romp. And it keeps its energy going. Now, it's funny watching it over 30 years later from when I first took a date and she didn't like it. This movie doesn't have the action that you would have. If they made this actual very specific movie now, they would have thrown a lot more money into the budget. And they would have had the scenes in medieval times and in a Napoleonic, wherever he was invading at the time when they captured him, and Greece. They would have done all this extra stuff. And you realize that was unnecessary. This is like History of the World Part 1. It's not about history. You just need the history as the backdrop, and then you can have the comedy. And it's almost low budget nature in some times. And it's not low budget. It was still a major release. But they didn't just dump money into this movie just to have, you know, like the Napoleonic scenes, they use stock footage. And that's totally fair. It kind of works. And that's kind of the charm of the movie, is it feels like it didn't have an unlimited budget and it said, you know what, we're just going to have to be funny as all get out. And they are. And it has some great moments. It's very quotable. I still love it, as evidenced by the fact that I still use the clip from the movie to tell that a movie like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure is excellent and it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump in and talk about Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. Bill and Ted continue to struggle with launching their careers when evil robots from the future try to stop the band from uniting the world.
Bill and Ted are dead.
It's the Grim Reaper, dude.
How's it hanging, Death?
This is not what I expected this place to look like at all.
We got totally lied to by our album covers, man.
Making new friends.
Excuse us, dude, but is there any way we can get back?
You may challenge me to a contest.
J7.
You have sank my battleship.
Excellent!
Best 2 out of 3.
What?
I remember seeing this in the theaters, and it was a lot of fun. And at the time, back in, 1991, I even thought it was better than the original Bill and Ted's. I said, this one is even funnier. Watching them now, stepping back 30 years, I will say the original's best. But this one's a really good sequel. This one keeps the characters the same. It changes certain things up, like the whole thing of having Missy divorce Bill's dad and marry Ted's dad. I just really was impressed this time around watching it and seeing how well they kept the characters and the stories the same. And especially when you have a movie that they didn't expect to do a sequel, and it did so well that they make a sequel, and they do kind of retrocon certain things in this, but they also don't destroy characters, and they don't make them do something different. Like, one of the things I can't stand is, like, in the Back to the Future movies, where Marty McFly, you never mention this whole, I don't like being called chicken for the whole movie, and then suddenly it's the biggest thing about his personality in the other films. That's just bad writing. And that is my biggest problem with the Back to the Future movies. They don't do this with Bill and Ted. They still make it work. Yeah, they retcon a little bit, but it still works. Not as good as the original, but boy, and a lot of this is due to William Sadler, because he's brilliant in this, his Death. So, yes, I'm going to have to say Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey also rocks, but maybe not quite rocks as much as Excellent Adventure.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available this week is the new movie, The King of Staten Island, plus retro releases of Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. And that's it for this week. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Tenant, Milan, and I'm thinking of ending things. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.